Everybody, welcome to Map Men, another special episode of Map Men. I'm Andrew Zarian. This week, we're going to be interviewing someone that I have kind of crossed paths with for a number of years now. I see his posts constantly. I see his podcast constantly. And recently, we kind of had a back and forth on Twitter. We started talking, and I said, why not? Why not have a great guest like this? Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful.com, Fightful Online on Twitter, Sean Ross Sapp on Twitter. Sean, what's going on, man?
Thank you, man. I told you off the air. I was drawn to your show a couple of years ago. Really enjoy it, and I'm glad to be on. I even stopped by your watch along on Sunday, I believe it was.
Yeah, I apologize for that.
I thought it was a good time.
Yeah, we started doing these watch alongs, and I keep telling myself I'm not gonna do it again. I'm not gonna do another watch along. It does more bad than good. It ends up becoming a 6-hour drinking session with me and Rich. But the audience loves it, and now I'm like, if we could make $50 from the super chat on YouTube, if we could just cover the beer, we're good. So immediately they cover the beer for the 6 hours. So it's become
fantastic.
You know, I'm 35. I can't do this as much as I used to. Slowing down a little bit.
Have you had to pull yours like WWE did? Did Nigel McGuinness show up and drop an F-bomb on the air and make you pull yours?
I didn't pull it, but I have not posted it on our website, and I made it private. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I'd set up. Well, you can't. That's the thing about watch-alongs on YouTube. Like, people always insinuate when they talk to me about it, they're like, oh, you could monetize it. And I'm like, no, you really can if it's a watch-along, because anybody watching along later would get interrupted by an ad, so you can't do that.
Yeah. So, listen, man, I think I have so many questions for you, because professional wrestling journalism and coverage and podcasting has evolved so much. I say that we're in the renaissance of professional wrestling right now, and I really believe it. We have so many different avenues of the sport to cover. You know, we have multiple companies. It's not just WWE. We have rumors and speculations coming from every other side. So before I get into what you do, I kind of want to know, how did you get into professional wrestling?
I always loved professional wrestling when I was younger. It's what my passion was. It's what I loved. Later on, baseball, MMA, stuff like that. But how I really got into pro wrestling was I started to train MMA and pro wrestling in, I think, 2008, 2009, because I thought maybe that's what I wanted to do for a career. I learned very quickly. I wanted to go down the journalism road of things, but I still wanted to get trained. That way I would be able to lend a little bit more credibility to what I do. So I did that. I've trained on and off a lot since then. But I remember it was January 4th, 2010, was when I finally said, all right, I'm going to try to write. Or at least that's the first column I wrote. It was the night that Impact and WWE went head-to-head on Monday night, and I had reached out to Bill Apter, someone who I grew up reading, and I pitched a column to him, and he agreed, and I ended up writing for him on and off for a while, for several years before I made it a full-time living.
You know, it's amazing, because sometimes you imagine that accessibility like that isn't a thing. You can't have access to somebody like Bill Apter. It would be a very difficult thing to get through, but sometimes if you just take the risk and you reach out, it's a great opportunity to kind of open a conversation. I did the same with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, really. Actually, we started talking about IATA, because I actually am in possession of a lot of their IATA tapes that a friend of mine won at an auction in 2002. So it's a weird little bubble. So I was like, hey, you want any of this? And I was trying to locate it. I have some, but that's kind of how you know, everybody is connected in some weird universe. What was that article? I'm just curious. What would you have pitched them?
At that point, I considered that like a really dark era in WWE in particular. And from about 04 to 09, I thought Impact was the show to watch. That was where I enjoyed my pro wrestling. But even then, I had kind of been like, I'm sick of this. So I'd pitched an article where, like, if wrestling hadn't turned me around by WrestleMania, maybe I would give it up. I don't think I really had any intent to. There's no way I could. But he liked it. He loved the column, and he asked me to stay on. And I did his MMA coverage for several years, and we contribute to pro wrestling stuff. Also, when you go to indie shows or you're booked on indie shows and you tell anybody, hey, I work for Bill Apter, they're quick to give you an interview. So that was a great in as well. That was That was I really, really loved working for Bill Apter.
He's a guy from New York, too.
Yeah. I think he lives in Pennsylvania now. But, man, that guy, now, I mean, I've been pretty open. I didn't get paid when I worked there. Did it out of the goodness of my heart. But later on, years down the road, he's the one who recommended me for the job I have now. So that ended up paying off because this is my dream job now.
So you also work for Wrestling Inc., right? You were with them for a while, with Raj and them. And then how did this happen? How did Fightful happen for you? Because it's really blowing up over the last, I want to say, year or so. I mean, you know, you could kind of, I know that you've been doing this for a while and, you know, your reputation speaks volumes, but sometimes the trends pick up and it's like a wave and, you know, you start getting more retweets and more people start seeing it. How did that, how did your opportunity with Fightful happen and how has the upswing been?
Well, when I worked for like Fansided and What Culture and Rant Sports and places like that, and then started at Wrestling Inc., I was an aggregator. That's all I did. And for those who don't know what aggregating is, it's where you take somebody else's news, you basically summarize it, write a story, link to them, and all that. I wanted to do more than that. So in like 2015, we started to do the podcast. That took off really, really well. And I was producing, editing, selling ads for that. And I was doing very well to the point to where the amount of ads that I sold paid for myself at the site. So I was like, okay, I want to move up. There wasn't really room for that. And I published this like 6,000 word article about Muhammad Hassan. And that got a lot of people to take notice of some more of my work. And that opened a lot of doors. I started to get offers from other websites, but honestly had no desire to work anywhere but Wrestling Inc. at that point. They were the most visited wrestling website in the world. So I was like, okay. A series of events happened, and James Vanderlinden, who ran JimmyVan.com back in the 90s and ran it full-time, contacted me, and he was like, hey, I've got this idea for a pro wrestling website. We're going to do boxing and MMA, and my eyes lit up. That was my dream. I'm a catch wrestling guy at heart, which integrates a little bit of everything into it, and that's always what I wanted to do. When I was at Wrestling Inc., when Raj mentioned to me like casually, hey, I might start an MMA site again one day, I was nagging him every week. I was like, please, please start it. Please start it. I'll head it up. I'll run it. I'll do whatever you want. But I got that offer. I know that Jimmy had spoke to a few other people. Later, I found out that Bill Apter was the person that said, hey, Sean Ross Sapp is the right person for this job. And it's been pretty awesome since then. I had a lot of people that told me it was a bad decision to leave where I left, and I'm on very good terms with them. But I went through my favorited tweets the other day, and people were like, oh, you have 2,000 followers. Why are you starting a new site? And I couldn't have made a better decision. It's the best decision I've ever made.
Listen, you got to take a risk sometime, right?
It's a scary one, too. It is a scary one.
Yeah, it really is, especially if you have something that's working. So let's talk a little bit about what it means to kind of cover professional wrestling to the level that you do. I don't write articles, but, you know, we generally, a lot of people share similar sources. Everybody has some maybe a little different of a source. What's your process? I'm not telling you to reveal you're hearing from, but what's your process when it comes to, you know, vetting people?
You would be surprised how many people just reach out cold and just don't require that much vetting because they got a blue check mark next to their name already and you know who they are. There are other people who, whether or not they've had a blue check mark or not, you're like, I know this info is bad. Why are you doing this? I'm not gonna report this. There's stories that I hear and I question like 2 or 3 weeks ago and I finally get that second source. Like this week, for example, not on the story that got a lot of attention, but another one, the women in Saudi Arabia thing and how WWE is making a push for that. I'd heard about that a few weeks back and I was like, we'll wait and see. And then got a confirmation this week that they're pushing for that. But it also helps when you reach out to these people and you interview them before they make it big. Now, I'm not saying that I'm nagging all these people I've interviewed in the past, but if I look up and down the WWE roster, I've probably interviewed 2 or 3 dozen people that work there now. I did a show with Shane Helms. He does not reply to me on Mondays or Tuesdays anymore for obvious reasons, but I did a show with Matt Riddle. That stuff helps. And because I did shows with them, Their contemporaries would know who I was. And like I interviewed Carl Anderson a month before he left New Japan and went to WWE. That one ended up helping. When you make those connections, it's easy to establish relationships and it snowballs from there. If somebody wants to develop connection, that's my biggest advice. Interview people early. Let them know that you care. Don't pretend you care. Actually care about their careers and the coverage that you're doing. And eventually you'll have a lot of people that you can reach out to and at least take the temperature of a situation.
Absolutely. And one example that something that I've kind of dealt with is, especially when you interview them early on, they have the ability to kind of open up a little bit more because they don't have the restrictions of, let's say, WWE PR on top of them. We interview every WrestleMania we get through WWE PR, a major interview. You know, we did the New Day, yeah. We did Enzo and Cass. We've done it for 3-4 years in a row. Would I say those are my best interviews? No, absolutely not. I wouldn't say those are my best interviews. But sometimes, you know, you have a guy like Jake Roberts that's, you know, in the middle of his sobriety. Sure. He comes on and he opens up and it really could change things for you as a broadcaster or interviewer or journalist. We were talking a little bit about the vetting, which I always find interesting. It's hard, right? Sometimes you do mm-hmm. have good sources and this is something that I always talk about. You know, you see reports saying so-and-so and so, but things could change.
Yeah.
You always see things could change. This is a business where things could always change, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're wrong for what you reported at the time, right?
Yeah, and I don't report a ton of storyline stuff. I mean, there was a period where I was posting complete rundowns for Raw and SmackDown, and even some of that changed. And there would be times when I would get those 15 minutes into the show because the people who got them around the show got them then too. So yeah, things do change a lot. I do think that some people lean on that a little bit too much. There has to be a pretty solid divider between opinions, hunches, and reporting. And that's why stuff I post offhand on Twitter is getting put on Reddit. And I'm like,
yeah.
Regret saying that now, but
and then you
that's
see the
why
comments.
I always make sure to say, this is not me reporting it. Please don't report this. This is a guess.
Yeah, or sometimes you report something and people call you an idiot. Like when I reported that Bill Goldberg was going back to WWE when a guy from 2K...
That'll never happen, Andrew.
I'll never forget a guy from 2K that I ran into at a bar in the city. I was wearing a Bullet Club shirt. And he's like, oh, you like wrestling? I'm like, yeah. He's like, tell me about the Bullet Club. And I just started talking to him. He goes, oh, you know who's going back to wrestling? I go, who? He goes, Bill Goldberg. I'm like, where is he going? He goes, WWE. And I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, this guy's a drunk.
Yeah.
And then he starts talking more. He works at 2K. He works at the PR team. And they're putting it together. And Bill Goldberg's going to be there. This was in December. And he showed up, when was it? Survivor Series of 2016?
Yeah.
So this was a long time. It was right around the time he was in the video game. It could have been December, January, that time frame was. So it was months.
The video game drops in like September, October, and then he did the match in November and then another one in January.
Yeah, so he was set probably in January to do this.
I don't think 2K likes me right now.
A lot of people don't like me after I said that. They didn't like me either. But
do you think we're getting our review copies next year?
No. They stopped answering my phone call after that. I got the guy's number and everything, and he never responded back after that day. I think he regretted opening his mouth. But something, you know what? That's a cool get, right? That's a one-off that you kind of fall into. Other times, you got to do the work, right? You got
to
do
one. One of my favorites was somebody who reached out to me. I don't talk wrestling on my personal Facebook, so I have one of those like pages that I never update. But somebody sent me a message on there, and they're like, hey, man, Ricky Morton's at this general store, and he won't shut up about going into the Hall of Fame. And I was like, yeah, right. I bet. Whatever, guy. And didn't even think twice about that one. Just somebody who I had never spoken to before. And literally a week later, Ricky Morton was announced for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, he's but
over there buying Hostess cakes, talking about his Hall of Fame induction.
I would have loved to be in that room for that. him at a gas. Ricky Morton walking into a gas station has to be a bizarre sight. And the fact that the guy recognized Ricky Morton at the gas station.
Yeah, all these years later. Which, I mean, he probably sees Ricky Morton wrestle all the time out there. That guy's still at it.
Wild, wild stuff. So I kind of want to talk more about now how what you're enjoying right now. Obviously, you said that in the when you first started, you thought TNA was really doing a great product. I still think Impact as a whole, they're doing a consistent TV show. Unfortunately for them, they are on a channel that nobody's going to watch, and they have terrible distribution, and they got the stink of TNA still on them. Unfortunately for them, because those guys are busting their butts and they're trying something. What are you enjoying right now in pro wrestling? If you were to say like the main thing that you're loving right now, what would it be?
Man, the last 2 weeks, honestly, WWE has been on fire the last couple of weeks outside of some of the social media stuff. NXT is always good. That's the easy answer. But I'll tell you a funny story about Impact, man. And I felt bad because I like their roster. I've been saying they've got like 10 to 15 people that any company should want. My wife's maid of honor has a husband who did a hunting show. And I joked with him and I was like, yeah, they got put on this channel that you could probably get on if you wanted. And I told him the channel and he goes, I'm on that channel.
That's awesome.
And I was like, oh, man. And he goes, no, you're right. Anybody? I was like, okay, yeah,
It's unfortunate, right? It says, considering the fact that we are in this somewhat of a renaissance for pro wrestling, TV is still a very tough thing to get.
Yes, it is.
We're starting to see kind of the AEW stuff coming down. Obviously, we're going to find out by September what their TV situation is. But what do you think of AEW right now with their positioning and the hype from the internet and everything out of it a little bit? What's your opinion of AEW and where they could forecast them 6 to 8 months from debut?
I think they will premiere on TV in 6 to 8 months. If I were to have guessed about a month ago, I would have said something on Turner. But since one of the big wigs is out there, I don't know. But, I mean, one championship MMA got on Turner. Now, granted, a lot of that's on BR Live. I don't know how. I'm not familiar with that platform at all. But if I were to guess, I would say there. I know that there were the rumors of Access. Access quickly shut that down when I asked them. And I think they need a wider platform than Access. I don't think they can just be on Access. And a lot of people say, oh, online. But Ring of Honor is available online every single week. And nobody knows about it. People always tell me, I miss Ring of Honor every single week. And I'm like, well, go to their website. The show's up there for free. They won't have the benefit of having a broadcast company own them. So that will raise some questions. I think they're going to have a pretty solid live event structure. I think it might honestly be kind of the opposite of WWE, where their strength is their live event and the secondary is maybe their television.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at the numbers right now for that for the next, Double or Nothing show that's coming up, if you do the math, they're going to be crushing $1 million gate.
Yeah, they should. I mean, I'm going to go. I don't know if I'll be there as press or if I got to buy a ticket, but I'll be there. And I don't like to travel a lot, but I saw that event and it was like, you know what? We're going to go there. We're going to get some content. It's a special opportunity. Their PR has been very easy to deal with. I can say that from at least my perspective. I like how they're doing the rallies and introducing people like that. I'm very interested in the true sports model that they keep talking about, especially with some of the people they have, because quite frankly, everybody they have can go in the ring to some degree.
Seriously, everybody. I work with Capital Wrestling to an extent. I'm a executive producer of their TV show.
Their PR is very good, too. I get stuff from them all the time.
Listen, it's Matt Ryan, man. That guy is hustling and bustling. I applaud him for that. But I consult and I help them out with, just business ideas and things like that. But we had Sonny Kiss for a long time.
Fantastic.
And what a fantastic worker. A unique style, unique character. You're something you don't see. AEW grabbed him up immediately. And I think that's great because you kind of want to separate yourself from everybody and kind of be a little different. The Turner stuff is interesting because I have a very good friend in a high profile television position, and he sent me this 3-page email about the audience and the viewership of pro wrestling. And every year or so, every network kind of plays with the idea, do we want wrestling? This is his what he said. And the problem is they need to specify their P1 audience, their P2 audience, and their P3 audience. P1 being us, right? Hardcore, yes. You know, we're wrestling fans. We tune in every week. We will, even if we dislike it, we'll still watch it. We'll show up to events, stuff like that. But the money is in the P2 and the P3. That's the only way you build an audience. You know, WWE has 2.8 million views last week. That majority of that audience is probably a P2 viewer, not a P1. They have some weird calculation. In his words, there's 300,000 to 500,000 pro wrestling fans in North America. Legitimate pro wrestling fans. You can't build an AEW with only 500,000 fans.
Yeah, not with the amount they're getting paid.
Yeah.
I do wonder about how the roster size will affect that, because they're not paying 90 to 100 wrestlers. They're going to pay about 30. When I look at things like that, I'm like, okay. Because the perception for a long time was that wrestling fans just didn't spend money. And I can't tell you how much further from the truth that is. One of our big selling points is our premium service, our Patreon, that I didn't think people were going to pay for.
It's amazing,
and they
right?
did.
It really is amazing. We do the same thing. And my bread and butter has always been technology. Pro wrestling was a hobby for me. And then my main career was being somewhat of a tech journalist. I cover technology for a living. And my audience size is twice or three times as large for my tech show than it is for my wrestling show. But my revenue, my ad rate, is about equal. So it says a lot about how the pro wrestling audience has kind of changed. People are buying merchandise. You have companies like Pro Wrestling Tees that are, and obviously they do more than just pro wrestling, right? 1 hour tees.
Yes.
But they are sustaining this unbelievable empire of the t-shirt business just based on pro wrestling, which is remarkable when you think about it.
And when you're a company that gets in before a lot of other people, look at USA Network. Their network was heavily built on the back of having pro wrestling on their network. And it's a staple to this day. I probably wouldn't know what 80% of the USA Network shows that I've watched are without if they had not been on primetime and then Raw and then things of that nature later on. So.
I can tell you too. La Femme Nikita and Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Early on, Murder, She Wrote was the lead-in to Monday Night Raw, and La Femme Nikita was the show that went on after. And all you got was, I would have never known La Femme Nikita or Murder, She Wrote. I'm not the Murder, She Wrote demo. I don't know. A 9-year-old version of Andrew is not the Murder, She Wrote demo.
Yeah, I always catch those last two really confusing minutes of NCIS with Mark Harmon and the fuzzy camera to hide the fact that he's 70. Yeah. But I discovered Burn Notice because it was on after Raw. I, quite frankly, got back into UFC because The Ultimate Fighter was on after Raw, and that's what a lot of people did, and that helped rebuild the UFC. So, I mean, the wrestling has a lot of power, but it's so up and down, and it's so unpredictable, and it's wild. It's such a unique industry to cover.
It really is. I you know, you sometimes talk about passion. I'm sure this is your, if you were to say, well, this is my passion, this is your passion. And it's wild. Same thing with me. You know, pro wrestling has become really my passion over the last couple of years, and I've always enjoyed pro wrestling, but I didn't think that it would lead into somewhat of a career in my broadcasting spectrum of content that I cover. So you brought up USA. I kind of want to touch on Fox a little bit. A lot of misconceptions going along with this Fox deal. A lot of questions are up in the air. We had originally heard that Fox is somewhat looking between 3.5 million viewers per week on the network. I was told WWE was very confident that this is a number that they could hit due to the way networks are presented. And somehow that mentality has shifted a little bit because networks don't have the strength that they used to nowadays. You know, if you were on a network, you were bringing, if you brought 3.5 million people on a network, that was a failure. Now, that's a success. So they're replacing a show on a Friday, which gets around 4 to 6 million viewers per week. What do you make? Do you think this is going to be a sustainable viewership for SmackDown? Technically, their B product to get 3 to 3.5 million every single week.
they're going to have to stack the deck. You're going to need, I mean, Ronda Rousey's probably not going to be there. You're going to need a Roman Reigns. You're going to need more big stars on that show. You're going to have to actually care about the show. You're going to have to probably put forth a fan-friendly product. Now, I'm not saying make the baby faces go over all the time, but money's in the bank for Fox and USA. So yeah. You don't have to troll the crowd nonstop. Baron Corbin doesn't got to come out in his vest and troll everybody for 4 or 5 weeks straight. You can you can have crowd-pleasing acts that are also people that you love to hate in some degree. But then again, you don't want one that is too overbearing to where they tune out. 3 to 3.5 million on a Friday? No, I don't think that's sustainable for them.
So the report was I believe it was a USA executive that said, well, it's not their main position. We may move them. We may move time slots. We may move them. We may shift them. I don't know if that's a pivot or that was originally the concept here. I don't think WWE would like to be on a Friday night. That's not a night that I personally stay home to watch TV. And I know that, you know, you're going to kind of lose that teen audience. You're going to lose people that are going out. So I don't know how well they could do in that time slot. But with that said, you know, there's a lot that comes with this Fox deal. We don't know. We don't know if this includes a special every now and then. We don't know if, you know, I've always said the big get for WWE by having USA and Fox pinned against each other would be to have WrestleMania on a network.
Yeah, that would be the thing. And look at the money that Saudi Arabia is paying them for shows that quite frankly do not matter that much.
No.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. And man, if you're talking 4 or 5 hours of advertising time in between matches, UFC's model, look at that. They have completely shifted the model to the point to where they're getting a ton of money for ESPN and ESPN Plus shows that are not as important as their UFC pay-per-views. That has caused them to even change the pace of their shows. Their shows are a breeze to cover on ESPN and ESPN Plus these days. I used to complain.
Why is that? Actually, you're the great person to ask this. The pacing and the ability to kind of, it's gotten smoother. Was that a fundamental thought process for them going into this, or just it was a happy coincidence?
It was, for ESPN, it was the thing they wanted to push forward. I was told that they took a look at things and they were like, we appreciate the content, but a lot of this is on our digital service. They're going to watch this on demand, so let's make it easier to watch on demand. The way that UFC used to do it is they wanted to keep you in that building for 7 hours. When I first started to watch UFC, there were 9 or 10 fights on a show. Now there are 12 or 13. Every main event is a 5-rounder. You're on 3 different broadcast platforms, so you have to stretch the show out to meet that. They don't do that anymore. In fact, they oftentimes on ESPN now are loading their cards up with an extra fight in the middle and then rushing them out there one by one. And so far, they've not had any trouble. And it's been, like I said, a breeze to cover. WWE Fastlane, this past week, that I was told ahead of the show, they're going to go with a more brisk pace. They wanted to do a more brisk pace for the show, and there's been a push for that. And I thought the pre-show was one of the best that they've done ever. It was one of the best utilized ever. So I'm hoping that all these companies are taking notice and saying, hey, you know what? Baseball's looking to make their game shorter. Basketball, it's never really been a problem, but football's trying to speed things up here and there. Maybe we should too, because asking people to devote an entire day, man, that's a lot.
It is a lot, and it's exhausting for me, right, to kind of cover this stuff. There are days where it's really exhausting, and like a WrestleMania, it's going to be 14 hours this year, right?
Can we confirm
it's going to be like 30 hours long? It's going to go over like 5 days worth of coverage?
Here's my thing. I look at things, and I'm like, man, that title could use a six-person match. That one could, because they haven't developed enough rich stories around them. Then every singles match that gets added, I'm like, oh, that's either going to be 5 minutes or we're getting 16 matches. And that's why when somebody asked me who should Asuka face at WrestleMania, I'm thinking probably everybody. She should probably just say, I want to fight everybody and defend it in the Battle Royal and eliminate everybody at this point. Otherwise, she's going to get a 5-minute match on WrestleMania.
Yeah, and you know, it's about the payday for them at that point, but you kind of want to profile your abilities. So let's talk about WrestleMania. Are you going? Are you coming to New York WrestleMania weekend?
I am not. I'm going to come to New York eventually, but I am not going this year just because I'm in a better place now. I got to give a lot of credit to Jeremy Lambert and Andrew Thompson. If you all don't follow them on Twitter, they are going to be big in the news-breaking game over the next couple decades if they so choose to be. They are the first news team I've had that allows me to go out and travel and get to places. And that so much of that is on their instincts and their journalistic integrity that is not easy to find in this line of work. So I think in future years, I'll probably end up going at least for the lead up to Mania. That's what's allowing me to go to Double or Nothing, but not going this year.
See, I'm in New York, right? I live in New York City. I'm not going to WrestleMania, but because I don't want to go to Jersey. Now that's part of it. I don't want to go to Giant Stadium. It's not in New York. There's this misconception that WrestleMania is in New York. It's in New Jersey. I don't want to go. It's not because I don't want to see the event. It's a lot of work to go to that. But I am going to NXT. I'm going to a whole bunch of other shows that are happening locally. I'm looking forward to that. But yesterday, and I don't want to give any spoilers, the NXT takeover card shaped up. They did this set of tapings. And without ruining it for anybody, because I don't want to spoil it, I personally love spoilers. Love it.
Yeah.
And I read spoilers. It's to me, it doesn't, but people get very upset when you leak something like that, when you don't warn them. So I'm not going to leak it, but I have to tell you, saw this card. Holy moly. Has there been a more impressive NXT card than this?
I think this might be the best one that we ever see. I'm blown away by it.
Yeah.
Period. I think it's great. And hey, I'm a little partial to Matt Riddle when I talk on podcasts. I will be objective when I review his stuff. And he knows that. He kind of pokes fun at me whenever I take a shot at him or something. But man, that match, pumped for, main event, pumped for, women's match, pumped for. Again, I won't give any spoilers either, but I see those top three and I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. And you know what? It's a 3-hour show. That's the best part.
If they want it to be, it can be a 2.5-hour show if they want it to be.
Yeah, at max, it's a 3-hour show, and it goes by so fast.
You want to talk about people who deal with the media, right? Triple H deals with the media, right? Keep in mind, this is a guy who, within wrestling journalism, was reviled for a long time. He's the one that runs media calls ahead and after NXT TakeOver and says, hey, get Fightful and Wrestling Inc. and SE Scoops and Wrestling Observer and all them on there. When WDPR, if I ask them for an interview, they're not giving me an interview. They'll give me tickets to Raw next month. They're not giving me an interview.
Yeah.
So Triple H being ahead of the curve and seeing that, man, that's awesome. I like that. It's a nice way of promotion. He doesn't do it in character like so many of these media calls I'm on where they have a heel on and they just play a character for an hour, and I'm like, all right, that's a waste of time.
You mean Vince's early media calls?
What is it?
You mean Vince's early media calls when he used to do those, the investor calls in character?
Some of those, but specifically Sami Callihan and Matt Taven. Like, all due respect to them for staying in character, but I can watch the show if I need that. If I need that soundbite, if I need that clip, if I need that article, I can watch the show. I can watch Impact Wrestling or Ring of Honor. I was on a media call this week, and Matt Taven was just healing everybody, and I'm like, great. I get zero articles out of this. No promotion out of ROH 17th anniversary. Jay Lethal was on 10 minutes later, gave me a straight answer. I was able to make an article out of that. Like, it's like get your stuff done within the confines of your show. A media call is a media call to help promote an upcoming event, and Triple H understands that. He sees the value in that, and the value in when he speaks somebody's name, an article is out there about it. He is very, very smart about that.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, you know, this guy, like you said, going back 12 years, 13 years, the coverage that Hunter was getting was abysmal. As, you know, all this stuff about him keeping younger talent down. And, you know, who knows if it was true, but the guy he's responsible for single-handedly bringing in that younger talent, changing what you know, WWE, the foundation of WWE looks like at this point, bringing guys in like Ricochet. I'm curious, and I would like to get your opinion. If Hunter wasn't, if NXT wasn't what it is today, right? If it was still a developmental, like a Florida or OVW, who would, you know, what would the landscape look like? Who would the guys be? You know, would there be a place? Obviously, a Matt Riddle. I saw like his 10th match and he was great. A guy like him would maybe stand out, but a guy like Adam Cole, you know, all those guys. Would they be in a position of possibly being, you know, the spotlight on the main roster? Or would I'm curious what your idea is, what the landscape would look like if we didn't have an NXT run by Hunter.
I don't think Matt Riddle gets signed if Hunter doesn't run it. I don't think that if Bill DeMott was like in charge of developmental without Triple H overseeing and all that stuff, I think if he brought in a guy like Matt Riddle, who, quite frankly, what I was told, made a joke of the tryout and was like telling them, hey, anybody got more? Like trying to show his personality while he's blowing through these workouts. Came to meet him in a flip-flop suit. He's not going to take kindly to that. Triple H understands that's an extension of somebody's personality. Triple H has an incredible vision, and it is kind of ironic considering he was the guy who was accused of holding people down for so long. God, I don't know who would be running it because Dusty, unfortunately, is gone. I think if Dusty were around, it would be similar to what it is now, but it's hard for me to look at any one person besides Triple H, because of his influence especially, that could have taken that. Maybe Shane McMahon. If Shane McMahon were doing it, yes, but I think it'd be a lot different because in so many ways, NXT right now is what Shane McMahon and Paul Heyman envisioned for the ECW relaunch. And if you watch the ECW Untold on YouTube, they pretty much say that. So Paul Heyman and Shane McMahon, those are two names, but the thing is, Shane McMahon was gone for a real long time.
Yeah.
And Paul Heyman wasn't involved in wrestling for several years. So it's hard to say where it would be without Triple H, but I think those are two guys that could have made it happen.
So you brought up the ECW original concept for ECW. If, for people who don't know, you want to touch on what exactly that was? Because it was really, they wanted to be internet only. They had all these ideas really early on in 2000 and probably four at that point, right?
Yeah, there was all this groundswell for the return of ECW. And at that point, their wrestlers were young enough to come back and do it. And there was a wealth of talent in the WWE developmental system. Keep in mind, we're hot off the heels of Brock Lesnar, Shelton Benjamin, John Cena, Batista coming up from OVW, and there's still a lot of talent. This is right before the models and the bodybuilders just blow up, and it's nothing but them. But ECW was brought back off the heels of the DVD, and Paul
Very
Heyman
successful,
was like,
yeah,
okay, let's run with this. Shane McMahon wanted to do it as basically the model that we see today for NXT, to have a different feel, a different look like NXT does. And pretty early into it, Vince McMahon saw the opportunity to where he could sanitize it and monetize it, did so, and gave it a 3.5-year run before they axed it for NXT, the competition show version.
If we never had December to remember, no, December to dismember. Ugh. What was it? December to dismember.
It was not a December to remember. I'll tell you that much.
If we didn't have that, if you think, I love the what ifs, right, in wrestling, because there's so many things that need to happen in order for us to get a moment. If that pay per view didn't happen and Paul Heyman kind of had control like he should have, we might not have gotten NXT to the extent that we have today. You know, that's a possibility, because that was the beginning of the end of that whole thing.
Yeah, one of the things I liked about that Untold thing was he mentioned all the people that were involved in that show. CM Punk, Kofi Kingston, who's maybe in a title match in WrestleMania this year. The Miz, Sheamus. You had a lot of names, even to a lesser degree. You had Daivari, who had established himself a little bit. John Morrison, Monty Brown, Rob Van Dam. And a lot of those people had their first WWE exposure on the WWE ECW brand, at least Kofi, Sheamus, Miz, Punk. But he was like, those people were going to come up anyway. They were a part of the WWE developmental system, but they helped get their exposure there. That is what NXT is to so much of a degree. And it's wild to look back and see how things are just better sometimes if one person doesn't have his hand in things. And if one person takes a step back and says, not everything needs to be the same, it can be pretty good.
Yeah. I was having a discussion with somebody about the boom period that we saw in the late 90s. And
yeah,
just to think about the things that had to happen for that boom period to allow that boom period to happen the way that it did, right? You had Bret Hart. I still think they were going to have it, but Bret Hart leaving and Shawn leaving kind of put them in a position where two of their guys that they built an entire half a decade around were out of the picture. And now you're in the, oh, crap, I gotta elevate some other talent. And it allowed guys like Triple H and The Rock, and, you know, they would have shined. But the landscape would have been very different if certain things didn't happen. And again, like you said, that's the story of professional wrestling. You know, injuries, people leaving the company. You know, CM Punk, for example, is a great person to kind of play that game with. You know, what would the scenario be like if CM Punk had never left?
Yeah, and I wonder how much bigger he would have been if they didn't have him lose to Triple H or anybody within the first couple of months after his popularity exploded. Quite frankly, I think he should have held that title all the way through to, till the time he lost it at the Royal Rumble to The Rock. He probably should have held it for even longer than he did.
So before we wrap it up, because I could talk to you for hours here, honestly, I'm really enjoying this conversation with you guys. If you haven't followed Sean, follow him. Sean Ross Sapp on Twitter. Obviously, Fightful Online on Twitter. And, of course, Fightful.com. Get all your pro wrestling news and information and podcasts over there. I'm a big fan of the website. I'm a big fan of what you do. I like that you don't I got to say this nicely because it'll offend people. But you don't make it about you and fighting with people and arguing with people, and you delivered the story, and you're very you're more conservative on the way that you release information. You recently told a story, you released information that Eminem there's a whole thing happening with him and WWE, and you know, but the way that you released it, it wasn't done in a sensational way. You literally reported what you heard.
Yeah, I reported what I heard. I'm not hesitating to talk about it here. They reached, Eminem's people reached a deal with 2K, and people on all sides confirmed it with me. And then when I released it, their spokesperson, who actually reached out to me yesterday, and I didn't see the email until 1 a.m., issued a statement to Ryan Satin saying, oh, we had a meeting, but we're not going to pursue anything further. I don't know if that means they pulled the deal. I don't know what that is, because when you report things, you have to be careful. I didn't say Eminem was at the meeting. Didn't say Eminem signed anything. Said there was an agreement. Now, when there is a conflicting report, I will defend that. If somebody comes out like what happened here and I get these DMs saying, oh, you should expect to hear from this person's lawyers, you should do this, I'm going to tell my readers that. I'm going to tell my readers that information is what I consider an attempt to be compromised. Like, but I'm not going to run that in a story. I'll tell people that on my personal Twitter.
Somebody told you to be prepared for lawyers.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's not how coverage of stories work, right?
Yeah.
What have you done to require lawyers to be involved?
That was the thing, and I had to talk to my boss, and he was like, you haven't done anything. And I did speak to my attorney, and he goes, you didn't do anything. He was like, you disseminated information that you did not sign any non-disclosure about. You have a shield law in Kentucky to protect sources. I've talked about it. We brought it up on our show last year when we were publishing rundowns and scripts last year. WWE hit us with a cease and desist and threatened legal action if we didn't reveal the source. We said, hit the bricks. We're not revealing a source. We'll stop publishing these documents, but that's about the extent of it. Eminem stories with WWE don't appear out of thin air.
Yeah,
otherwise, they would more often over the last 20 years. So if that doesn't end up happening, I'll feel bad for the people who made the deal happen. But I was not ready for that story to be as big as it was. I didn't expect that at all.
So I'm going to throw a couple questions your way. I like to do this at the end of the show, and I like to kind of know where you're at. In a year from now, right? A year from, if you were to, you were to just off the top of your head, who do you think is the top draw in WWE? Main roster.
Main roster, top draw in WWE. Well, if they push Roman Reigns the way that they have, it'll be him, just because anybody that they decide to push to that degree by default will be, because no matter what, there's going to be a giant groundswell of people who defend them. That's tough. It's hard for somebody like Becky Lynch to sustain that from this point to 1 year from now. Ooh, that's a good one.
Landscape changes very quickly, right?
It does. It does. I'm going to say by this time again next year, it's going to be another woman, but I don't know who it's going to be, because at any given point, you have women especially who get this giant following and reaction out of nowhere. Asuka got thrown into the title match just because she got a better reaction than Charlotte on a random episode of SmackDown, and Vince was like, oh, goddamn, pal. Can't believe it.
Goddamn it, pal.
And now she's where she is. Yeah. Man, I'm going to take a wild guess and say Seth Rollins, but honestly, it wouldn't surprise me to see Bayley get like this just wild reaction out of nowhere if she gets booked terribly for a couple of months, because people are sick of seeing her getting booked terribly. But man, that's really hard to tell with WWE and who they go or who they don't go with.
Yeah, listen, we may have Kofi Kingston in the WWE Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania. So anything is possible, really. It's a constantly evolving business. And I want to know, where do you think AEW is going to be sitting in a year from now?
I think they'll be doing probably about 1.25 million on TV. They'll still be selling out venues. I think they're going to probably in 2020, if I were to guess, they're probably going to try to sell out a 20 to 30,000 seat venue. They should.
They could have done it. And, they could have done it with this show.
Yes, they could have. And maybe they try that in September. I don't know. I'm not privy to those discussions, but I think they'll be a solid alternative. I think they'll be what Impact was in the mid 2000s, but with better minds behind it.
Yeah. You kind of touched on the number that's kind of the goal, 1.25 million. If they do 1.25 million, they are in a phenomenal position.
Yeah.
On a weekly TV show. I'm just going to throw it out there. I think their first show, they're going to do 760,000, and it's going to sit there for about a year around the 500 to 750,000 mark. Based on my assumption of pro wrestling viewership. Now, That depends if they get on a TNT or a TBS, which would be very difficult if they're on a Tuesday, considering there's NBA games at that time. So I don't know what that scheduling is going to be. They ain't giving up NBA.
They are
not giving up NBA, but it may be better for them to take a crappier time slot and a day, so they have that cross promotion with the NBA. That is something that will be vital for their business. When you're watching an NBA playoff game, and here you go, you have the announcers plugging AEW professional wrestling on Turner. That's a humongous thing to have in your arsenal of marketing. You know, that goes a long way. So I like your 1.25. I think that would be the best scenario. I'm a total optimist, but I want to be a little bit of a pessimist here. I'm going to say 750. You know what?
I think that's fair.
Let's make a bet. When you come to New York,
it's a lot unknown.
Let's say you're in New York and it's a year from now. I'll buy you lunch if you're right on that 1.25.
Well, that is a very optimistic, generous estimate based on the fact that I've never seen one of their TV shows. That's the thing.
Knows? Yeah, who knows what it'll be.
And I don't know what network they're going to be on. If they get on TNT, that's what I'll go with. If they get anywhere but TNT or TBS, I think it's probably 600 to 700,000.
Excellent, Sean. Pleasure to have you on. This is the first time we've done this. I definitely want to do this again.
Let's enjoy this.
Yeah, this is great, guys. Again, Fightful Online on Twitter, Fightful.com, MMA, boxing, pro wrestling, a lot of stuff, podcasts on there. You cover it all. in the world of fight sport and professional wrestling. It's a not an easy job. I applaud you for your ability to do this. I envy your patience when it comes to having to write articles and manage this kind of thing that you're doing. I think it's an amazing upward swing that you've had over the last couple of years, and you should be really proud of what you've created there, because you really, the information that you're putting out there and the news that you're putting out there, I stand by it. You know, if I were to look at it, if I was looking at Fightful.com and I see something is reported, I really don't second guess it. I don't say, well, is it true? How is it being reported? Because right now we're in a very weird bubble of journalism. Everything is opinion pieces that are listed as facts. Facts no longer matter. Open-ended questions, clickbaity headlines, and you guys really do a good job of not doing that. And you should be very proud of what your whole team is doing there. So it's absolutely great. Fightful.com, Sean Ross Sapp on Twitter. Guys, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. This will be available via podcast, on video and audio, and everywhere Matt Men is posted. I recommend and I ask you guys, subscribe to us. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to us. If you're listening to us on iTunes or Spotify or anywhere podcasts are, subscribe to us. It helps us out. We are going to be back tomorrow on Friday. So if you listen to this on Thursday, we'll be back on Friday with our weekly summary. Rich is going to be here. So we'll be talking about that and a whole lot of everything else happening in pro wrestling news. And we'll have some fun tomorrow, guys. So see you next time. Take care.